This is Phil Farron, and I am driving around today, and then I will drive home. It is Saturday today. The sun is going down. This is just about as late as I can record this podcast and still call it this week. It's been a good week. It's been a busy week. My wife and I were on vacation this week. We left on Monday. And we ran out to Vegas. And then we got up Tuesday morning. And we drove over to Bakersfield, which is 4 hours. So we drove over to Bakersfield. We got there by 3 o'clock-ish, 3:30-ish. Checked into a hotel room there. Went to meet my my niece-in-law and their new baby. And then my nephew came home in a little bit. And we chatted and jabbered for a while. And then we got in his car. We drove up to Visalia, which is another hour. And then we rendezvoused there with my brother and his wife. And we had a meal together at Trader Joe's. No, it wasn't Trader Joe's. It was something Joe's. Anyways, I don't know. Good food. Had a lovely evening chatting with them. And then we drove another hour back to Visalia with them. Spent the night in Bakersfield at a hotel. And then we got up Wednesday morning, drove 4 hours back to Las Vegas. And then we went to see, like, Red Rock Canyon. We went to see Ka, which is a Cirque du Soleil show. And then Thursday, we were all kind of wiped out. So my wife and I just kind of hung around for most of the morning and early afternoon in the little condo we had. And then we went out, saw a few things here and there, went to the Bellagio, saw their little gardens that they have there. We were going to go see O, but they were sold out. So we just went to Whole Foods, got some stuff. And then we got up Friday morning and we kicked around a little bit, went to see the Gold and Silver Pawn Shop, which is the pawn shop in Pawn Stars. And I got myself a Morgan silver dollar there just for a keepsake. And then we came back in Friday to Bentonville. We spent Friday night in Bentonville and then drove in today. And now I'm getting all caught up. Got grocery shopping done. I'm unpacked. Now I'm getting the podcast done. Just trying to close all those stress loops. Once I get done with this, I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to exercise. Then I'm going to make myself something to eat. Then I'm going to watch a little TV or something. And I'm going to bed. But as I said, it was a good week. I was actually able to get some reading done on Windfall Broadcast, which is the next one in the series. And I'm about half done, I think. I'm over 50,000 words with it already, so I'm close to half done. So basically now I've got to reread what I have, edit it up, and then get started writing the new stuff. And hopefully it goes another 50,000 words or so. Which means if I'm going 5,000 words a week, that's another 10 weeks. So theoretically, I'm ready to start editing sometime mid-December. I spend a couple of weeks editing, 2 or 3 weeks editing. Then I spend January building a cover. And then we go to beta February 1st. So that's the plan. So far good. So far so good in the read-through. I think it's fine. It's going to move all the pieces forward to the next slot. May not resolve all the things that people want to get resolved, but that's okay. I got 24 books here, so I got plenty of time. So once you get this one knocked down, that'll be 2, and there'll be 22 to go. This is crazy. One of my friends commented when I posted the cover on Facebook, and mentioned that there's 24 books in the series, she commented and she said, "Who starts a 24 book series when they're 55? I said, "Well, I guess that would be me." So anyways, that's that. Before I left on vacation, I did put together some notes for the podcast, and I was actually supposed to record the podcast out in Vegas, and we just got busy doing things, and so I'm doing it now. I came across an article that I thought was an interesting article and had some interesting things to say, and the more I read through the article, the more interested I got, and then we got to one spot where I went, "Oh, yeah, I got to talk about this on the podcast because this is kind of what I'm talking about in Windfall." So, the name of the article was ISIS, which is, of course, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. ISIS is a disgrace to true fundamentalism. And this is by Slavoj Zizek, I think. Anyways, this came out early September. And he starts out by saying that it's easy to look at ISIS and to assume that they are the latest chapter in the long story of the anti-colonial awakening. You know, countries trying to put themselves back together after the arbitrary borders had been drawn by the colonial nations. And so this is an effort. All these kind of uprisings, like the Kurds in Iraq and things, is just an effort to try to put things back the way they were before the Western colonial nations came in and just kind of decided who would have what borders. He said, but what causes fear and consternation is another feature of the ISIS regime. The public statements of the ISIS authorities make it clear that the principal task of state power is not the regulation of the welfare of the state's population, i.e. health, you know, fight against hunger. What really matters is religious life and the concern that all public life obey religious laws. Just period. That's it. You have to obey the religious laws. I'm going to go ahead and turn around here and just head back the other direction. I've gone about as far as I want to go here. So, when it comes to the things that ISIS does and the hand of ISIS does, they really don't care about human atrocities. Because their philosophy is, if we just take care of religion, everything else will take care of itself. Which is kind of an interesting idea. So you get these really interesting things where you've got these people who are brutal, and yet their leader poses with this finely made Swiss watch. You get these things where the ISIS officials' ideology is to rail against Western permissiveness and all the sexuality and all that kind of stuff there is in Western permissiveness, but it's the daily practice, as it says in this article, of ISIS gangs to include full-scale grotesque orgies, robberies, gang rapes, torture, and the murder of infidels. Because all that's really important is that everybody toes the line, that they understand what is required of them religiously, and they just do it, whether we do it or not. Because that's their passion. And this is kind of where the article started getting interesting to me, because they started quoting Friedrich Nietzsche, who perceived how he thought Western civilization was moving in the direction of what he called the last man. And the last man is a pathetic creature. I'm not used to traveling on this road, so I'm just looking to make sure nobody's coming. Is a pathetic creature with no great passion or commitment. He is unable to dream, tired of life. He takes no risks. He seeks only comfort and security. This is a quote from Nietzsche. Quote, "A little poison now and then, that makes for pleasant dreams, and much poison at the end for a pleasant death. They have their little pleasures for the day and their little pleasures for the night. but they have a regard for health. We have discovered happiness, say the last men, and then they blink. So, he said, in the case of the West, one way to think about this is that we are the Nietzschean last men who are immersed, in his words, in stupid daily pleasures, while the Muslim radicals are ready to risk everything, engaged in the struggle up to their self-destruction. And this is where it got interesting. Walter Butler Yeats' Second Coming seems to perfectly render our present predicament. Hey! That's the poem that Windfall is based on. And he quotes out of there, "The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity." He says, "This is an excellent description of the current split between anemic liberals and impassioned fundamentalists." I'm letting a car pass. Okay. The best are no longer to fully engage, while the worst engage in racist, religious, and sexist fanaticism. Then he makes an interesting turn. He says, okay, well, but are terrorist fundamentalists really fundamentalist in an authentic sense of the term? Do they really believe? In his mind, what they lack is a feature that's easy to discern in all authentic fundamentalists, from Tibetan monk Buddhists to Amish in the United States. This is the easy authentic feature: the absence of resentment and envy, a deep indifference towards the non-believer's way of life. And I'd say, yes, absolutely. That's it. Because if you are really, truly a fundamentalist, and you have moved far enough into what you believe that you are confident in those beliefs, the fact that there are non-believers, that does not threaten you. You know, I've told friends, you know, when I have conversations with people, and if the subject of religion comes up and we talk for a while and they say, well, I believe that, and I say, I hope that works out for you. You know, he said, when a Buddhist encounters a Western hedonist, he hardly condemns. He just benevolently notes that the hedonist's search for happiness is self-defeating. In contrast to true fundamentalists, the terrorist pseudo-fundamentalists are deeply bothered, intrigued, and fascinated by the sinful life of non-believers. One can feel that in fighting the sinful other, they are fighting their own temptation. Yes, yes, they are. This is why the so-called fundamentalism of ISIS are a disgrace to true fundamentalism. And then he notes that it is here that Yeats falls short of the present predicament. The passionate intensity of the mob bears witness to a true lack of conviction. But see, that's not what the poem says, if I might correct. The poem said, the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. He doesn't say necessarily that the worst are full of conviction. He says the worst are full of passionate intensity. And that's actually going to come into play later in Windfall. And that's why it was kind of interesting. Anyways, but he does make a good point when he's talking about the ISIS fundamentalists. He says, deep in themselves, terrorist fundamentalists also lack true conviction. Their violent outbursts are proof of it. How fragile the belief of a Muslim must be if he feels threatened by a stupid caricature in a low-circulation Danish newspaper. The fundamentalist Islamic terror is not grounded in the terrorist conviction of their superiority and in their desire to safeguard... One moment, have to make the turn. And in their desire to safeguard their cultural religious identity from the onslaught of global consumerism. He says, the problem with terrorist fundamentals is not what we consider them that we consider them inferior to us, but that rather that they consider themselves inferior. Now, this is an interesting observation. If that's true, it doesn't do us any good to, in his words, have our condescending political correctness assurances that we feel no superiority towards them. It only makes them furious and feeds their resentment. See, I'm going to use this. I'm going to use this. It's going to take me a little... It's going to take me a little while to get there, maybe, but I'm going to use this. This is good. He says, the problem is not cultural difference, i.e. their effort to preserve their identity, but the opposite fact that they already like us, that secretly they have already internalized their standards and measure themselves by us. Paradoxically, what the fundamentalists of ISIS and those like them really lack is precisely a dose of true conviction of one's own superiority. In other words, they're mad because of what we have. And they would like to have that, but they feel guilty about having that. And so then they got to come over and war against it, or then they have to war in their own countries about it. However, as has been amply demonstrated, that when they war against it, they commit atrocities that are the very thing supposedly they're warring against, with the orgies and the gang rapes and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that was just, you know, amazing to me the first time I heard it was the fact that a lot of these suicide bombers, a lot of these terrorists and stuff, they all watch pornography ahead of time and get themselves all amped up. You know, so they're the rich, you know, that these are the guys that are supposedly doing Allah's work and going out and killing the infidels, and yet they're behaving in ways that are obviously non-religious. Such is the state of the human mind, because we find all kinds of ways to twist around and make things make sense to us. It's just very, very sad. But it sure does give me a lot of fodder for windfall. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.